Welcome to Vice Casting Couch, Season 1, Episode 19. I'm Ryan, and joining me is John. Today we're going to be talking about updates to the Capital One and Twitter hack, as well as vulnerabilities found in the OkCupid dating app. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm swell. It's been a slow day, so it's been good. you want to start?
Sure. So, OkCupid, their dating app, there's been some flaws found in it by some researchers that could potentially let attackers remotely spy on like users' private information or perform various different malicious actions on behalf of the targeted accounts. So the researchers from Checkpoint, they found that they could craft requests and send them so they can steal like the user's authentication tokens and user IDs. Other sensitive information such as email addresses, preferences, sexual orientation, and some other private data that they didn't elaborate on. They shared it with OkCupid and it is fixed, and they did state that not a single user was impacted by this. But the flaw is kind of interesting. They were reverse engineering the Android app version 40.3.1, which was released on April 29th, and they found that how OkCupid implements some of its actions in the app, it uses these deep links, which enables a bad actor to customize it, and it would let the app manifest a file and open a web browser for JavaScript to be enabled. From there, you can get the user's cookies, and there's some other flaws that they found that also enabled cross-site scripting attacks, so they can inject this malicious JavaScript. With that, because they have the user's cookies and they have all this JavaScript and everything, attacker-controlled server where this JavaScript's responding to can then steal your profile information, authentication tokens, user preferences, and transmit all this back to the attacker's server. And then they can tell your device to go to this. There's this GraphQL website on OkCupid, and then it can fetch all the information, your email address, all that stuff that listed before, like, you know, sexual orientation, height, family status, yada yada yada.
Okay, so I mean, the only kind of, I guess, dangerous part of it is it can grab your email.
Yeah, it's more just a privacy. No, it can grab like your address, your email address, your sexual orientation, your height, family status, personal preferences. Like, gotcha, you know, okay. It's a dating app, so whatever you put on a dating app, it could pretty much get access to.
Okay, yeah, okay, gotcha. Similar to the Ashley Madison, but not quite as
as there's some parallels, but so it wouldn't be able to be implemented amass as much information as Ashley Madison, as this kind of requires like the target individuals, from my understanding of reading the article. Okay. Where Ashley Madison, they hacked it and downloaded a whole database.
So, but I mean, they could still release like who was on the site, though, I guess, or sell the emails.
Oh yeah, they could if someone really did it, but it looks like it only affects the Android app, so I'm not sure. And it has been patched now, so they claim no one was affected, and
yeah. They say,
you know, who knows?
I mean, I'm just saying, in the past we've seen a lot of companies that either don't say anything or kind of downplay what happened in an attempt to kind of save face. Much like Capital One after they got hacked.
Oh, you want to talk about Paige Thompson?
Yeah. Capital One. Yeah. You got the hint.
So, this is just a quick update. Nothing crazy happened, but basically the United States regulators, they fined Capital One with $80 million because of last year's data breach that exposed personal information of more than 100 million credit card applicants of Americans. Fine was imposed by the Office of Comptroller of the Currency. It's an independent bureau within the United States Department of Treasury that governs the execution of laws relating to national banks. So in the press release, they say Capital One failed to establish an appropriate risk management before migrating its IT operations to Amazon's cloud-based service, AWS.
Yeah.
Which included, you know, appropriate design implementation and network security controls and adequate loss prevention. They go down the line basically saying Capital One messed up and ultimately, as we've gone over the story before, Paige Thompson did not use very, complicated or, very technical attacks. It was very, not at all. It was quite easy.
Just found a vulnerable admin computer.
Exactly. So with that, they go on to mention that they failed to patch security vulnerabilities, and they violated these interagency guidelines establishing information security standards, which all U.S. banks must comply with.
Yeah.
So I think really that's the main thing about the fine right there. Like I said, 106 million Capital One customers were affected. Mm-hmm. 140,000 Social Security numbers were leaked, and 80,000 bank account numbers. Also, some Canadian social insurance numbers, about 1 million of those were leaked.
Yeah, I was going to say it was international.
It was pretty big.
She got a lot of info and then just stored it on her server in her bedroom.
As we said, Paige Thompson, she was, 33? She was arrested following the breach and charged with computer fraud and abuse. That's pretty much it. I was just saying how basically, some companies are actually getting repercussions for stuff they do. It seems like a lot of them get away, but this is one of the few times. Most of the time, it seems like with banks, they get fined at least.
Yeah, they're kind of, held to a higher standard, I'm not really sure. But yeah, it definitely does seem like most companies get away with a slap on the wrist. Especially when you kind of break down what they get fined. I know we brought it up in the past where they'll get fined $80 million or something like that. But then you look at how much they actually earn a year, and it's like a drop in the bucket to what to their yearly revenue. So it doesn't really mean much. Kind of like the YouTube getting fined and stuff like that. They got fined millions and millions of dollars, but in the grand scheme of things, they're making billions of dollars a year. So it doesn't really affect them too much. It's just kind of like bad press.
Oh yeah, this is a slap on the wrist. Apparently in 2018, Capital One made a $28 billion. So $80 million's nothing. I guess it is a slap on the wrist. This just further proves our point. You can misconfigure stuff and leak a bunch of information, and they're just like, oh, bad.
You can potentially devastate people's lives that they have to crawl back from for years if their credit is ruined, and they get fined a week's worth of income basically. So that's
probably a couple days, honestly. Capital One's a huge bank,
They have their fingers in a lot of pies. If you want to hear a more for at least the beginning of the story, since this is an update, we have a whole episode on that previously. If you just look for Capital One, that'll pop up. But that's definitely a good, what is it? Over a year later, I think now.
Yeah, it's been over a year.
Yeah, they finally, something happened, I wouldn't even call that a punishment or repercussion. Like, this kind of just the government doing something about it, I guess.
There could be more going on behind the scene. I'm surprised there's not some class action lawsuits or anything like that.
That's true.
I guess it's just this one office in the Treasury saying you failed to adhere to these standards that are set out for all banks to follow. We're going to fine you for that. So there could be more fines on its way and, potentially other repercussions for Capital One.
I mean, hopefully, because as you said, it wasn't very complicated for Thompson to get in. So it was kind of a stupid mistake to begin with. It wasn't a whole lot of effort went into it. Something more should definitely be done, in my opinion anyways. You have an update on Twitter as well?
Yeah, just a quick update. So as everyone knows, a couple weeks ago, a lot of high-profile Twitter users were hacked. So stuff like Warren Buffett, Barack Obama, Kanye West, Bill Gates, big, big people, Elon Musk. And basically, it was something along the lines was posted. A lot of people have been asking me to give back, so here's my chance. Give me $1,000, and I'll send you back $2,000. Kind of a modern evolution of the Nigerian Prince email scam. But three people have been arrested. Mason Shepherd, a.k.a. Shaywan, who's 19. He's from the United Kingdom. There's Nima Fazley, aka Rolex, is his screen name. He's 22 from Florida. And then a 17-year-old named Graham Clark, who was arrested in Tampa Bay, Florida, according to a local Florida news channel. He's a juvenile, so there hasn't been too much released about him, but has been reported that he's being charged with 30 felonies of communications and organized fraud. There's also some stuff in here about money laundering, I guess, because of the Bitcoin. And here it just kind of says like they've amassed over $100,000s in Bitcoin just because people fell for it. You know, all these people were posting at the same time is very orchestrated. And they further go on to say that because of the whole pandemic, a lot of Twitter employees have been having to work from home. And with that, they also have access to the internal tools they need to do their job. So they did a social engineering and a spear phishing attack, which gave them these unauthorized access to these internal tools that then allowed them to post on all these people. 130 user accounts were targeted. Of those, 45 were the verified accounts, you know, with the check mark, which is like, hey, that's actually that real person, Barack Obama. That's really you, you know. And then it did say that there was access to these direct messages inboxes of at least 36 of the accounts, and only 8 of the accounts had the download your Twitter data tool was used. Which lets you download your whole like Twitter profile, essentially.
So yeah, as we mentioned in the other episode, this wasn't very well thought out then. It seems like anyways.
I'm saying, you know, I would have just ran off to Belize and had me $100,000 in Bitcoin. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. Like, it seems like they kind of just did it and then that was it. And yeah, I mean, they didn't, as far as I know, they didn't release how exactly they, like what the emails were or anything like that, like how much effort they actually put into this.
You know, this is a continuously evolving story. I just figured I'd mention that three people were arrested, and there is on different charges, conspiracy to commit wire fraud, conspiracy to commit money laundering, you know, computer fraud and abuse, all kinds of stuff like that. Like,
Well, at least that's some more good news. That's some actual good news. At least they weren't fined like, you know, $5 or something. Oh man, are you excited about the theaters opening back up?
Nah, man, I'm just gonna stay inside. You know, I got my directional antenna. I can steal Wi-Fi from other people.
Oh my word! You probably shouldn't say that.
I mean,
allegedly.
Yeah, I do research and see what protocols are being used.
Oh yeah. Don't come after us. But I mentioned that because I came across this article saying that AMC is going to charge 15 cents for tickets starting August 20th. They're opening up, I believe, a third of their theaters again, if anyone hasn't seen this yet. So yeah, the tickets will go on sale for 15 cents, kind of a, I guess, a throwback to how much it cost when they first opened in the early 1900s. I'm sure the concessions will still require a mortgage, but the tickets will be cheap. So if you want to get out of the house, and if you're able to, then maybe go to the movies for 15 cents.
Do they say anything about their stay-at-home options? Or...
How do you mean? Like streaming?
Well, I've heard, I haven't done too much research, but like movies right now, like, you know, most of the time they get released in theaters, there's all this hype, people go to the movies, but a lot of people are still either a lockdown of some sort, or they really still don't feel as comfortable to going out to these movies right now. So I know people have been trying to find like ways to release new movies for people at home. Like I think Frozen 2 was released on Disney Plus.
Yeah. They a couple companies have done that, namely Disney, and all their new movies that they've come out with, they've stuck on Google Plus, which brings up another topic as well, with the kind of failing movie theater industry. There are so many streaming services now. I don't know how theaters are going to come back from this. I know a lot of people like the big screen for like movies that they want to see, you know, when they first come out and all that stuff, and they don't want to wait for them to like go to DVD and stuff like that, myself included. There's a few like movies that are coming out in 2021 that I'll probably go to the theater to watch, but there are so many streaming services now. I mean, Amazon and Netflix have been around for a while now. I mean, now you have Disney Plus, you have HBO, you know, Hulu, Nvidia has their own streaming service now, that you can buy movies from and stuff like that. I saw a really good video. I think it was by Film Theorist, and he was talking about the kind of failing movie industry, and they charge so much for tickets and concessions because they're like hemorrhaging money because that doesn't quite cover the cost of these movies that are coming out. So I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what theaters do. I mean, obviously we're seeing this kind of an incentive for you to go, but I wonder how they're gonna do in the future. Once, I mean, now people are pretty used to staying in their homes, watching, you know, streaming services and stuff like that. And home theater systems have come way down in price. I mean, you can get a, you know, a 50-inch flat screen TV and like a surround sound for under, you know, $800. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what they do to try to bounce back.
Yeah, man. I would. The one thing I was going to say, not trying to get too off topic, is I'm surprised we haven't seen the resurgence in like drive-in movie theaters, you know?
So I thought about that as well, because I would rather prefer to, you know, sit in the comfort of my car and watch a movie. but the problem with that, though, is the sound quality. Because usually, like the old drive-in theaters and stuff, you like clip down a little speaker into your car, right? But you didn't really get, you know, when you go to the theater and they have, you know, the Dolby surround sound, or I don't know. I guess that would kind of take away from the movie theater experience, in my opinion. I don't know. What do you think? Like, for me, that would be a huge detractor. If I went to the movies and the sound was coming out of a freaking like Bluetooth speaker on my dash.
Well, so I know in a lot of the newer drive-in theaters, they use a FM transmitter. Mm-hmm. And that way you just tune to the FM station. Honestly, man, I'm not trying to sound like, you know, maybe I sound broke when I say this, but my car probably has the best sound quality of anything I own. you know, I get in there and I listen to some Rick Ross, some Ricky Rose, you know, like,
I mean, and then I just start
jamming out.
Fair enough. I mean, if you have a nice sound system in your car, I could see that.
This is stock. I've done no modifications or nothing.
Okay. Well, like, I guess it depends on your
standards. Whatever Subaru's doing. <they're...
laughs> I guess it depends on your standards. For me, you know, obviously most people have experienced the sound quality of going to the theater. For me, it would be a huge detractor. I mean, maybe not. I guess there's people that would agree with you that it's not really a huge, you know, problem if it just comes through your car speakers rather than like a fully surround sound experience. But,
well, imagine Billy, you know, he got two 15-inch subs in his like trunk. He can just roll up to the thing and blast everyone's like, you know, windshields out.
I mean, okay, that would be a reason not to go for me.
No, that's a reason to go, man. You get that whole like, you know, 40 hertz rumble of like the transforming.
Oh yeah,
feel that.
the 4D effects of your windshield glass hitting your face.
Exactly. That's what I'm talking. You get the realistic scratch simulation from the glass exploding. And,
oh my word. Yeah. No. That's a no for me.
all right, everyone, tune in for John's drive-in.
No,
my being goodness. Released 2 weeks from now.
Oh, speaking of that, though, kind of on the same theme as drive-ins, I have seen that like YouTube watch parties and stuff are becoming, or have become, I guess, more popular.
So if we're going to talk about watch parties, a lot of streaming services are getting on of it. I know Amazon has a watch party capability. Hulu has a watch party capability. Oh, really? If you have a Plex server, certain devices like Roku's and Fire Sticks are capable of having a watch party. So basically a watch party, for people who don't know, is it syncs up the video. So multiple people will join, and then when everyone's ready, you click go, and it syncs up the video. And then say if Jim has to run off to like the bathroom or get snacks or something, he can pause it, and it pauses it for everyone. So you don't have this, like, you know, on the phone, 3, 2, 1, go, trying to sync it up. It automatically syncs it up for you.
Yeah.
And I've used it before, I think it's fantastic. I used it with Plex, and Plex is really good. I like their implementation. I haven't used Hulu yet or Amazon, but I hope it's a feature that sticks around, because honestly, it's, you know, there's so many applications, you know, for this to be used.
It definitely is a unique perspective on like movie watching. You know, instead of either going to the theater together or watching it separately at home, ask someone if they want to watch it with you, and you just click play, and there you go, and you're watching the same thing at the same time. It definitely is a it's a good feature. I haven't tried it, but I know several people who have, and they love it. They use it all the time. But I don't know.
Well, there's just so many applications. Like, say if you're on a business trip, or like for our troops that are deployed, you know, and say they have some free time, they could, hey, you know, with the kids, you guys want to watch like some movie, and then it's synced up, and you could maybe FaceTime with your phone over here or something, and then like it kind of gets that whole like immersive experience. Like, it's pretty seamless and makes it a lot easy
for true.
Everyone.
That's a, I guess, another nail in the coffin for movie theaters. I mean, if you can
man, once I can recreate the movie theater popcorn at home, I'm never going back to a theater.
You can. What are you talking about? It's not that hard.
Well, I haven't figured it out yet. I'm over here like, got 2 pounds of butter melted in a pot, and I just got...
You got a pound of cholesterol.
Exactly. You know, the popcorn is like all shriveled up and just soaked.
I've been able to recreate pretty close to movie theater popcorn, because you can get the fake butter stuff that they use. You can buy that from, I think Walmart has it. They have like the synthetic butter alternative or whatever the crap it's called. I mean, it's basically plastic, but whatever.
I mean, it's the best plastic I've ever had. Let me tell you,
it is good though. I'll give you that. And I also got the little, little shakers that they have, like the ranch and the nacho cheese, like powder.
And like the garlic parmesan.
Yeah, that stuff's real good. I like that. Yeah, I've gotten pretty close to recreating it. I'll invite you over sometime when you're.
You mentioned Walmart. You know, do you want to talk about Walmart Plus and the what it could bring to the table potentially, or should we wait for another episode?
That's a pretty. I think we could go more in depth. On a different episode, because that's. I haven't heard too much about it. Yeah, I feel like there's a lot there that we could go into. So yeah, we can definitely bring that up on probably in the next episode. We can look it up. Oh, and Elon Musk's Starlink kind of sucks.
Does it? I saw there was a beta program people could sign up for.
Yeah,
I was kind of interested in.
So the beta users, they were getting download speeds ranging from 11 megabits to 60, which isn't terrible, but that's not much better.
Better than some dial-up, like.
Okay, I mean, it's better than a lot of things, but it's not great. It's basically on par with any other satellite distributor that I've come across, really. We were talking earlier about where I live. There's pretty much only one fiber backbone going to where I live, and the only other option is satellite. From there,
Did it talk about the latency? Because I know he was trying to cut down latency a lot.
Yeah, they said it's 31 megaseconds or milliseconds to 94 for ping latencies. Isn't that great either. It's not terrible, but yeah, it's just, I don't know. It doesn't seem that great. And again, this is beta testing. So I hope it does get better, because if it does at least reach like 100 megabits, I mean, they promised a gig, which is huge. I don't know if they're going to get that anytime soon with satellite and Wi-Fi. That's a huge ask. But anyway, they said that they would eventually get to a gig, or at least that's what was rumored from Elon Musk. But right now it's sitting between 11 to 60 megabits. So I don't know how they're going to improve that to a gig in the next, like, I don't know, couple years at least. I don't know. I hope they do, because I think it would be pretty great. I haven't seen anything about how much it actually costs. because again, it is still in beta testing, so they haven't released a whole lot. I hope they succeed, because I would definitely like to not pay one company and be stuck with them forever. if I could get a gigabit download from satellite Wi-Fi, that would be nice.
Yeah, I got to deal with Comcast, man. Oof. Bruh.
Bro, they're like the freaking dinosaur of the Wi-Fi industry.
They're the only option in a lot of these states, man.
Yeah.
Like,
No.
The only other company around here is CenturyLink, and they're DSL, and they're a lot slower than... I thought about it.
Yeah, I don't know how. I thought
about just having both.
It's just both at the same time. Double your speed.
Well, yeah, one's cable, one's DSL. I can just have two lines, you know?
I mean, okay. Never mind. I don't think that's how that works, but okay.
It is how it works, man.
So you're going to combine them together?
Well, yeah, if you got like a load balancing router, some applications would use it, but other ones wouldn't. Unless you had like some kind of reverse proxy or something, but you know. Quickly want to mention about SpaceX really quick. But apparently the U.S. Air Force tested it with SpaceX, and they were able to get... 610 megabits per second data link from Starlink to a C-12 aircraft in flight.
Oh, wow.
So I just found that, and that was in 2019. So I think there is hope for Elon's vision. You know, one thing a lot of people don't mess with is like Elon. They might call him crazy, but look at Tesla stock right now.
I mean, okay. and not mention the other dozen companies of his.
Hey, look at SpaceX, man.
That didn't they do so well.
SpaceX is doing fine.
All right. I mean, yeah. Okay.
I just respect the vision. I respect what this man's doing. And
I'm just interested on what comes out of it.
You don't mess with Bezos, you don't mess with Zuck, and you don't mess with Musk. Like, let me tell you.
Oh my goodness.
Man, tell me how all those people short in Tesla stock are doing. I'm just curious. You know all those people that were short in Tesla stock?
Yeah.
Let me know how they're doing right now.
I mean, I'm sure they're doing fine, I guess. I'm just interested. I'm just interested to see what it comes out with. If it's a good product.
I am excited for Starlink, so we'll see what happens.
Like, I don't care about Musk at all. If he decided to retire tomorrow, I wouldn't really care. But I am excited to see what he actually comes out with and what products I can actually use.
So I would be curious to see as there's actually a DEF CON talk. So DEF CON was canceled, the in-person cybersecurity event, but they put all the videos and stuff online. And there's a PhD student, I forget his name, but he was actually able to take $300 of off-the-shelf television equipment, because satellite internet and satellite TV, they use the same standards. And so he's able to plug it into his computer. And so when you talk up to the satellite, it's in a wide beam, because the satellite doesn't know your exact position.
Yeah.
But it knows the exact position of the ground station, so it does a focus beam to that. But when it responds back, once the information comes back, you can like kind of one-sidedly hear part of the conversation. And he was able to get tons of information about S&P 500, you know, firms and lawyers who were like using satellite and maritime vessels and all kinds of stuff. So it's a really interesting talk. If y'all want, we can link it in the description.
Yeah, for sure. So he's able to eavesdrop on it?
Yeah, he was just able to eavesdrop, because honestly, a lot of the stuff from what he was saying is in plain text. Like, it's there's no encryption by default. And windmills, you know, like the satellite, the wind turbines that are in the fields.
Yep.
A lot of times these are placed there, but they have no infrastructure to connect up to them, so they can't manage them. Mm-hmm. So they just use satellite. And he was able to access like admin consoles for those, so he can like do some configurations if he wanted to, and all kinds of stuff. Like,
so
I'll have to send the link.
You use a VPN?
Always. 100%. Or it brings up a better conversation is wireless communications should be encrypted by default.
No, I agree.
Because once you broadcast it, anyone can listen to it. If it's a wire, you can argue that, you know, unless someone has physical access to the wire and yada yada, but wireless, like especially with the advent of software-defined radio and all this cheaper stuff, bringing it into the reach of the common man. Like, we're finding exploits left and right, you know.
It's kind of crazy. You can protect a wire a lot easier than you can, you know, stop someone from accessing your radio waves.
Exactly.
It's kind of impossible. So you have to encrypt it or do something to try to keep people out. But yeah, no, I definitely agree. End-to-end encryption on especially freaking satellites, because there's a lot of extremely important infrastructures that use satellite communication. I mean, in the government, in the military, like you just said, managing a huge energy infrastructure, like that's kind of a big deal.
Man, small stuff.
Oh yeah, small potatoes. I mean, especially with everything going on in the world. I mean, yeah, that could be a huge deal. Let's just say I don't want that to be a topic in the future of China hacking U.S. infrastructure through satellites. That would be not something I would want to talk about.
I think there was actually something done where they tried to, what's the word I'm looking for? They pretty much, I think the Air Force opened it, or the Space Force opened it up for like people to try and hack their satellites. Like,
oh, really? Kind of
like a bug bounty program, yeah.
We'll see how that goes. I mean, that's better than getting hacked and having to deal with that. I don't, in my personal opinion, every like government and stuff like that should have some sort of bug bounty program, because I mean, if you can get paid, you know, sometimes millions of dollars because you found a freaking vulnerability in you know, certain companies' infrastructure and stuff like that, there's a plenty of people who would love to do that and just retire from finding a bug somewhere.
This guy on YouTube, I think it might have been Vice or Motherboard, one of those companies, but basically he was a felon. He got out and no one wanted to hire him, but you know, he taught himself how to code and he does his bug bounty stuff full time, and he just finds bugs. Like, because sometimes you always hear about the $1 million prizes, but even if you find a small bug, sometimes they'll give you like a couple thousand here or there, and he just does that as a living.
Yeah, there's always that as well. Do you have anything else? Take that as a no.
Elon Musk 2020.
Oh my goodness. That man. Anyway, I'm not gonna go. I've said enough. I think we'll end it there.